Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Muddy Knees Media.
Cock out, garnering leave, and Sherry gone. Just another sacking season in the EFL. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Yes, it's me, Faye Carruthers, back with you and ready to guide you through yet another tumultuous week in the football leagues. We've got Exeter's Matt Taylor joining us later. Ryan Conway will be taking us through the sacking of Philip Cocu. And of course, there'll be some match reviews as well. But I can't do it alone, so let me introduce you to the double act of the century. Yeah, maybe. First up, he's played for Arsenal, Southend and Stevenage. It's Adrian Clark.
Hello, double act of the century. I think we need to rein it in a little bit, but we'll take it.
I should have got like a drum roll and all sorts of stuff. You must be delighted at Southend's win though, Adrian.
Oh, yes. Just so relieved. I know that it's just been hell really for everyone involved with the club so far this season. Let's just hope it's not a false dawn. Let's hope they can kick on from here. But yeah, that was really satisfying win.
Yeah, absolutely. Alongside us as well, Swindon Town legend. You and I know him as Sam Parkin. It is Sam Parkin.
Hi, Faye. How you doing?
Very well. That was an exasperated hi, Faye. Come on, you can do better than that. Tell me your highlight of the weekend, please.
Oh, the highlight of the weekend.
Doesn't have to be football, bearing in mind what you've just told us off air.
Yeah, I'm juggling a lot of plates at the moment, but we're moving home and obviously I've got a baby, but he did sleep through the night the other day. So big celebrations in this household.
Wow, I thought those bags looked a little bit brighter. Right, let's get to tradition. A performance of the weekend each, please, after this.
Performance of the weekend.
So for any new listeners, we each get 15 seconds just to tell you very quickly about some outstanding performances from the weekend. It's a little bit of fun. Don't take it too seriously. We'll start with you, Clarky. Show us how it's done. You've picked Tranmere.
Yep, Tranmere have stopped whining and started winning, and it suits them. 2-0 and 3-2 down, not helped by a soft pin, but they deservedly fought back to win 4-3 at Vale Park. Blackett Taylor unplayable up top, slick passing, and Morris's injury time screamer.
That was a very loud gong. I nearly had to remove my headphones. You got drowned out at the end there. Sam, you've got Southend. Go.
The first win of the season and the first away win since January, stopping a run of 9 games, 8 defeats and a draw. Oxley brilliant in goal, White imperious at the back and a wonderful winner from super sub Aqua. Go on the Shrimpers!
Oh, do you know what? You've actually stolen mine from Crew. I've got Go on the Alex at the end of mine. I can't quite like extend the Alex, but I'll have to take that out now. Otherwise, it looks like I'm copying. Right, I have Crew. 3-2-1, go. The Crew ship had run aground in recent weeks, no points from their last 3 games, but they sunk the league leaders Peterborough with first half goals from captains Pickering and Kirk. Yes, I know they're not actually the captains, to inflict Posh's first defeat in 9 games. Go on the Alex. I needed it. Okay, head on to Twitter to vote. You can find us at The Totally Show and you'll be able to find loads more content there too. And don't worry, MK Dons fans, we will be discussing your win later. Okay, gents, before we actually talk about the football, there's a few things that we need to get through. First up, the EFL accepting the £50 million bailout for Leagues 1 and 2. This, of course, coming after Parliamentary Committee heard that 10 clubs were seriously struggling. Sam, you can't really blame them for taking it, even though back in October, we understood the initial rejection.
Yeah, I think they wanted something separate for the Championship, which seems to be getting put in place now. And obviously, there was a discrepancy about how the money was going to be delivered. Now it sounds like it's going to be 50 million in grants, which seems sensible rather than making these clubs, which are in difficult predicaments pay back money at some point. So yeah, it's all positive. I don't know how long that's going to keep the clubs from the wall. It certainly helped them with the salaries for last month, this month, and maybe into the new year. I don't know. Where does the money go? Does each club get an equal share? Do the clubs that have maybe got more power in terms of their spending get the same share? I don't know. It's quite difficult to police, and maybe as well the Premier League, the EFL will want to see how that money is spent. But of course, it's a real positive that they're getting some funds, and hopefully things nationally and in the world will have improved when that money runs dry.
Yeah, it still does leave a lot of questions unanswered for sure. And where exactly, Adrian, does it leave the Championship as well? Because the EFL statement said Championship clubs also acknowledge that discussions in respect of the levels of support they will receive will remain ongoing.
Yeah, exactly. I like the solidarity that the club showed. Basically, Leagues 1 and 2 said, look, we're not going to accept it until the Championship are brought in to the conversation. And the Championship themselves have said, look, take the money. We're going to sort something out for ourselves, effectively. And it seems that, unlike the grants, which are on offer, we hope, to League 1 and League 2 clubs. That has to happen, by the way. I think loans would be disastrous further down the line. These clubs won't be able to pay them back. So let's hope it is going to be grants. But for the Championship, it's different because they do have, you know, ways of paying back loans because of the income when fans are allowed back into stadiums. So it appears they're trying to negotiate, I think, £200 million worth of loans, the Championship clubs. And on that, I guess it could make it easier to divvy up because the clubs themselves can effectively choose how much they want to borrow, depending on how much they need it at the time. So hopefully it'll be a smooth process. For Leagues 1 and 2, Sam's right. How does it get divvied? I think, personally, just from the outside looking in, just feels like just split it evenly down the middle because every club needs the cash right now.
Yeah, that would be the fairest way for sure. But I'm sure it's never that straightforward, is it? That's the money stuff wrapped up. Let's head to the Championship, where the managerial merry-go-round is picking up a pace.
So I'm sitting in the dressing room, got a towel over my head, and I can just hear goal after goal after goal going in. And I mean, that's down to me, that, isn't it? Yeah, that was a low point, definitely, and big regret.
Peter Crouch is pretty good at podcasts, apparently. So he joined Ruby Walsh and Paddy Power himself on the latest from the Horse's Mouth Show to talk about Liverpool, Spurs and feeling like a head on a stick. Search Paddy Power on your podcast provider and listen now. Paddy Power. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
So in the Championship, no matches played, but Philip Cocu's job became untenable at the Rams and Tony Pulis is now an owl. Let's talk Derby first, though. And to help us do that, we've got the Athletic's Derby correspondent Ryan Conway with us. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
So no real surprise that Philip Cocu has gone, perhaps. But what was the eventual straw that broke that camel's back?
I think the back-to-back home defeats to Queen's Park Rangers and Barnsley were the ones that did it. Obviously, he wasn't at the Barnsley game because he was having to self-isolate, but he was in constant communication with Twan Sheepers throughout that game over the phone. He had picked the team for that day, and I think Liam Rossini was basically acting as manager, but Cocu was still having some influence. So yeah, I think the failure to collect any points from back-to-back home games really, really did seal his fate.
Yeah, Ryan, it was interesting to see Liam Rossini make some quite dramatic changes tactically midway through the game that he had in charge. Is there any feeling there that maybe he hadn't agreed with the team that had been selected from the off or the approach necessarily? Because obviously moving Rooney back into midfield was quite a drastic course of action. Was there any kind of issue behind the scenes?
Not from what I'm led to believe, because Liam had addressed that post-game and said that it was quite strange, actually, because he said that the decision that at half-time that he made to bring Jozwiak on and withdraw Matt Clark and drop Rooney back into midfield, as you said, that decision, he said, was his decision, but he had talked it through with Philip, which I found I don't know, maybe a little bit strange if Philip had picked the team and picked the shape. Yeah, that to me was a bit like, oh, okay, that's weird. But I didn't get the sense there was any sort of dissension, you know, amongst the coaching staff. Because I also believe the shape they reverted to, the 3-4-3 for the Barnsley game, was the correct shape. They played with a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1 against QPR, which they reverted to in the second half of the Barnsley game. And in my opinion, that is the incorrect shape to go with. So, yeah, I actually think moving back to that was a more puzzling decision.
Ryan, he obviously had to deal with a hell of a lot off the pitch during the first season. How much of it do you think, when you look at everything that's gone on the face of it, boils down to just not having probably enough firepower this season? Has there been mistakes in the transfer market? Because every time I see them, I just think that team is crying out for one or two out-and-out strikers. And obviously, Martin and Marriott were let go in the summer.
Yeah, I think the inability to find a striker that could get you, you know, closer to 20 goals than 10 goals. You know, I think Martin Wagon is dependable for, you know, 10 to around 15 a season, you know, in that bracket. Marriott had a spell under Lampard where I think he got seven in nine or something like that, but never really hit the heights, I think, that many were expecting for the 3 million that they paid for him at the time. And obviously he'd just come off 27 goals at Peterborough. I think the ways they've tried to almost manufacture firepower from, you know, trying to get more goals from midfield and trying to get, you know, spread the wealth as it were in that area has been detrimental in the fact that, you know, they've only scored one goal from open play. In fact, yes, they have only scored one goal from open play in the league this season. Ironically, that was a Jack Marriott goal against Luton. I think Marriott always felt a little bit like a square peg in a round hole in Phillips' system. Now, one could argue that that is also the fault of Cocu not knowing how to get the best out of him. But he was also a player that you felt like he needed like five chances to get one goal. He wasn't very clinical in a lot of the games that he'd started, because while it's a fair argument to say he didn't get a good run of games, what is neglected in that argument is he has chances when he has minutes. Like, chances do fall to him, he just doesn't put them away consistently enough, and that is why he probably remained on the bench for a lot of the time under Cocu.
Ryan, I read your article earlier on, and you know it very much points to the fact that Philip Cocu was a popular person at Derby and very classy in many ways, but just perhaps wasn't able to turn things on. You know, Sam's mentioned there everything that he's had to deal with, but he did do some good things as well. However, the moment that Wayne Rooney was brought to Derby last season, questions were automatically put that he would take over. So is he first at the top of the list to take charge?
I think the prevailing feeling is that he wants the job and he's pushing for the job. And there's also a feeling and a consensus that if the appointment is going to come from within the club, that it'll be Wayne Rooney that gets it. You know, there's new owners coming to town. What better way to get more eyes on the thing that you've bought than putting Wayne Rooney in charge of that thing? You know, and I don't think that should be the way to go. You know, Rooney is still doing some of his badges. You know, Liam Rossini is the more qualified coach. And I think, you know, him and Rooney have got a co-managerial arrangement going on in the short term here. But I haven't heard anyone sort of mention Liam as a serious candidate, which is a shame because he's a qualified one.
Ryan Conway, Derby correspondent for The Athletic. So that's not the only managerial change in the second tier. Just quickly, I want both of your thoughts on Tony Pulis in at Sheffield Wednesday. Sam, is it a bit of a firefighting job for him or long-term, perhaps?
You'd have to say the former, probably. It's been a club where me and Adrian have been quite scathing, I would say, over the last couple of seasons. The lack of a plan. I think they've looked really poor defensively. I don't think that's been helped by having a really imbalanced midfield for a large part as well. So, yeah, I think he's going to have to get them organised further in terms of what Gary Monk was able to do. But it's not an appointment that is going to thrill. I've got a good mate who's a Sheffield Wednesday fan and he is not thrilled. So that's what I'm going to go on. Nothing more scientific than that. Although I did enjoy the social media photo that Sheffield Wednesday put out of the baseball caps that are selling like hotcakes in the club shop. That's yeah, pretty much all I'm going to say on it, because it's not something, you know, if it was my club, I wouldn't be delighted with that appointment, but I'm sure he'll do a good job.
Maybe that's why they brought him in, commercial sales. Clarkey, how thrilled are you?
Well, yeah, look, on that subject, a very important subject, obviously, headwear. It's about time he upgraded, isn't it? He's a man, you know, of a certain age. I think he's outgrown the cap look myself. I think he should be looking for something a little bit classier moving forwards. But let's not dwell on it.
I dare you to tell him that.
I absolutely won't tell him that. But yeah, let's see. Look, he's a safe pair of hands, you would imagine. The issue, I think, at the moment, and Sam's right about overall they haven't had a plan and the midfield's been quite weak, too much reliance on Bannon, is scoring goals at home. You have to go back to December 2019 for the last time they scored more than one goal at Hillsborough in a Championship game. So that needs to change. And Tony Pulis isn't renowned for his attacking football, of course, but he'll find ways to score goals, I'm sure. The set pieces will no doubt improve. And yeah, look, after quite a long period out of the game, I'm sure he's pretty hungry, actually, to make sure this job's a success. It might, I don't want to sort of put him into retirement yet, but it might be his last shot at management. And I think he'll be really, really keen to make it work. I imagine he'll put everything into this.
So keen. Producer Abby's actually told me he was wearing a beanie in the photograph that Sheffield Wednesday put out today. So, you know, maybe he's upping his game on the headwear stakes. Or they're just making him show the whole range. He's the new model.
That's training ground, isn't it? Training ground, beanie, and then the cap comes out for his formal wear on a match day.
Brilliant. Okay, that's the Championship. Let's actually delve into some proper match action, shall we? That's next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The heating's on and is getting darker earlier and earlier. So why not cheer yourself up this November with a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a week? That's right, just 100 of your finest British sterling. And every 7 days, you'll get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around. Plus, a breaking news service and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts. Sign up today at theathletic.com/leagueshow.
So League One headlines. John Sheridan switches Wigan for Swindon. Ben Garner's told his time is up at Bristol Rovers. On the pitch, league leaders Peterborough lost to Crewe, whilst perennial promotion favourite Sunderland lost to MK Dons. Meanwhile, the Tigers move up to second with a 2-0 win over Burton, and Accrington beat Northampton. Shall we start with that goal fest at New Meadow, though? Shrewsbury 3, Swindon 3. John Sheridan's first game in charge of Swindon saw the Robins come back from 3-1 down to share the points with the Shrews. Sam, what have you made of Sheridan's switch in the week? Is he the right man to keep Swindon in League One?
Well, keep him in League One? Blimey. We've got bigger ambitions than that. I suppose everyone from the outside thinks it's a left field appointment, but John Sheridan has worked for the owner who owns Waterford in Ireland for, I think, only a brief spell in the summer, 6 weeks or something. Tommy Wright, his long-term assistant, was Richie Welland's assistant manager. Paul Jewell, I think, knows John Sheridan well, who's at the club as well. So it wasn't a surprise to me. Obviously, he's not been pulling up trees, John Sheridan, in the last few seasons. So that's probably why it's raised a few eyebrows. But safe pair of hands, need to improve defensively. You know, they've been so good going forward, but defensively, real problems. And he's already spoken about That's the area he's got to focus on. Just to watch him brief at the weekend, he was in the dugout, but the guys I've already mentioned, Tommy Wright in particular, took the team. So, yeah, he's not had too much involvement as of yet. And, yeah, it's kind of sums up Swindon's season, I would say. Slow out the traps, weak defending set pieces, but obviously an abundance of talent going the other way. So he'll reflect and he'll be positive about the reaction of the players getting back in the game. And yeah, maybe just thinking pragmatically about how he can make them a bit more solid. Not so much the personnel that will come back. He's got, you know, injuries, Dion Conroy, Baudry's been missing, Donoghue will come back in at left back. But maybe just, I think maybe sacrificing one of those forward players and bringing in another tough midfielder like they had last year. They had a two-man pivot, which was really good for them and really strong. So continue Matt Smith to go forward from midfield and get goals, the on-loan Arsenal man, and maybe just secure things up in the midfield with another body.
Sam, they've scored more goals than Charlton, Lincoln and Sunderland. So in that sense, it's clicking, isn't it? It's just, he's coming into a job. All managers should know how to organise a defence. So in many respects, he can almost, you know, leave the forward guys to continue doing their stuff and work on that rear guard, can't he?
The biggest thing actually from the weekend is that Joe Fryer played in goal and it was his first league start for Swindon, and John Sheridan had him at Carlisle and he had a really horrific double leg break when he was on loan from Middlesbrough. So they've had a young lad on in goal from Manchester United, and I think giving the confidence to the back four or back five or whatever it is that we've got someone we can rely on behind is big for any team. So it's been quite a difficult start for Matic Kovar, the on-loan Manchester United goalkeeper who left out for the first time. And I'm not saying that was John Sheridan's decision, but whoever made it is a big call, and still shipped three goals, but they need to get that sorted moving forward.
Is he the type of person that would make big calls like that? Because you played with him, Sam, didn't you? What's he actually like?
Well, he's tough. You know, I had him in my midfield when I was playing my first games really on loan, and he'd been such an amazing player that I think it was just such a thrill, such a buzz for me to be on the same pitch as him. I loved it, but you were left in no uncertain terms what your job was. And if I gave the ball away, he'd give you a mouthful. But at that age, I was just buzzing to be on a pitch with someone who, you know, probably played in the World Cup, didn't he, John Sheridan? Certainly played in cup finals for Sheffield Wednesday. But I would imagine he's taken that into his management. He will pull no punches, and the lads will know in no uncertain terms what's required of them. And this year, you're right, Faye, they can't get engulfed in a relegation battle. And hopefully it'll be mid-table. But I think the fans, on reflection, are probably just hoping to stay in the division now, given what's going on in the world.
Right, Sunderland 1, MK Dons 2. Sunderland fans able to climb aboard the Parky Out bus again after they lost to Russell Martin's MK Dons. Adrian, is this just one of those anomalies that happen, or are there some real reasons why they're perhaps not capitalising on their chances at the minute?
Well, that is a good question. I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that at the moment, not least Phil Parkinson. It's been another kind of strange season. Just when you think Sunderland are finding their feet, as in previous seasons, they suffer these kind of setbacks. They're not defending well. That much is for sure. Their average expected goals against across the last six games is 1.46 a game, which is a lot. And the previous six games was just 0.6. So they've got issues without the ball, and MK Dons ruthlessly exploited that in this game. I think in central midfield, they were outplayed at the weekend by a more vibrant, younger engine room trio. They certainly had a little bit more speed and dynamism about them than Power, Leadbitter and Scoen. And I think there's just too much reliance really on Wyke and Gooch to come up with something. Gooch, I think, is a really lively player. Wyke is their top scorer by miles, but you look at Grigg, who missed a sitter in this game, open goal. Grigg and Graham, two guys they're spending an awful lot of money on, haven't scored in League One this season. So there are issues for Sunderland. I personally still think they're a decent team that should be in and around the playoffs, but Yeah, I think automatic, which is what Sunderland fans demand, it might be beyond them with this group of players.
What about MK though, Sam? A decent amount of praise needed for them. They're 4 unbeaten. It's their first win away from home in over a year, 20 games that is. So what exactly is Russell Martin doing right?
Well, he's doing a lot right. I think, you know, I spoke about them a few weeks ago when they beat Gillingham at home. It's a very different way of playing in comparison to every team in the division, I would say, this season. They're focused on themselves. Don't worry about the opponents. Let them worry about them. And the interesting thing from the weekend, I think it was really brought into focus with the lack of Premier League and Championship games, using the goalkeeper as a spare man. I saw David Priest talking about it on Twitter. And he was heavily involved down the right-hand side, so overloading on the right-hand side. And what it does, it just takes a striker out of the game, and then they can play 11v10. So it's something I saw Swindon did. I've spoken about it on a number of occasions, this exact style. Not only that, but there's Louis Thompson in the midfield, ex-Swindon. Ben Gladwin played in a wide position on the weekend, and great to see those two thriving again in League One. That was in the absence of the two normal wing-backs, Paul and Harvey, who are away on international duty. So what they needed was the cherry on the top. And Cameron Jerome looks like he's potentially going to supply that. I thought it was a brilliant goal. Great ball in, probably was Gladwin, who's got great technique. And Jerome with probably the best header you'll see across the weekend. I thought it was phenomenal. So, yeah, they're doing a lot right. And interestingly, having said all that, they only had 38% of the ball in this game. So it's probably the first time. And let's credit Sunderland, who, yeah, they're a powerhouse in this division, but they've still got a lot of good players and they're going to dominate a lot of games. This was MK having more thrust on the counter-attack than maybe I've seen before.
Yeah, and you mentioned Cameron Jerome there. I think he probably got a bit giddy pants with that equaliser because did a bit of a tweet and delete at 1:30 in the morning. I don't know if either of you saw this, but he says, "Don't often tweet," because of course somebody took a photograph of it before he managed to take it down. "Don't often tweet, but let me throw something out there. Maybe a nibble, maybe tongue-in-cheek. Poor, poor side with average players for the league. It's time to accept you're now a bang average League One team. Glory days are gone. Hashtag let it go. Hashtag Sunderland." Oh, what was he thinking?
Brutal. Brutal. Let's hope we're not looking to invite Cameron Jerome on for an interview in the coming weeks. And
it'd be fun.
We've tucked him up big time here, haven't we? Exposing the deleted tweet.
He tweeted it.
I love it. The journalism kicking in there, Faye. Top work. It's unusual, isn't it? Because footballers very rarely say things like that, being critical of opponents. See, I don't know whether something went on there. But look, he's enjoying himself, isn't he? He's definitely made a difference for MK Dons, as has Scott Fraser, who I always really liked him at Burton. He scored some great goals. Classy operator in midfield. And those two seem to be the kind of missing links. You know, they've got that experience and quality to go with these younger players, these players that are being moulded by Russell Martin in a very unique style, as Sam puts it. I think the future could be bright for MK, providing, of course, they keep winning. Because if they don't keep winning, then, you know, as we've seen elsewhere, chairman won't hang on forever. So I really wish them well, because it's good to see someone trying something different.
Very much so. Now, earlier on, we were talking about managerial casualties, and one of the other managers to leave this week was Bristol Rovers' Ben Garner after they were hammered 4-1 by Fleetwood. Does anybody know the answer to this question? What actually were Ben Garner's Bristol Rovers?
I think Ben Garner is clearly a very qualified coach who got an opportunity at a League One club, and maybe it just wasn't quite the right fit, given that he wasn't that adaptable. I think sometimes you have to adapt to the league a touch, and I think he was quite keen on playing possession football. I think he was backed in the summer as well. When you look at the names, you look at the type of players he was able to bring in, listed a few: Baldwin, Ostuma, the duo from Chelsea, Grant and McCormick, Westbrook, which I thought was a fantastic signing from Coventry. And I think just sometimes you have to be a bit more adaptable with your tactics. And maybe that's where he's fallen down, with as well losing your top marksman you know, you lose someone like Clark Harris, who I think probably now pound for pound is right up there. Thought it was probably the best you could go and get in terms of a replacement for Ivan Toney. So he had his work cut out to replace that. He's brought in Hanlon, who's about, I don't know, he's an 8-10 goal a season man at best. So when you lose your focal point and don't really replace it, it's a struggle. So I think there's a number of elements, but yeah, that defeat, the nature of it, I'm not overly surprised.
The fans weren't that down on him, Faye, really, to be honest. I think they liked what he was trying to achieve. What they didn't like was the 18% win ratio. And it's as simple as that. You can admire a lot of the work, the coaching, what he's done behind the scenes. By all accounts, he's brought in a lot of, you know, professionalism with the analysts and nutritionists and whatnot. He's changed things up behind the scenes. But ultimately, if you only win 6 games out of 33... You're going to pay the price, aren't you? You're going to lose your job, and it is his team. Sam's bang on. He signed 11 players, most of them senior players, and it's just one of those. It hasn't worked. I felt for him at the weekend because the goalie was missing, Jankala, wasn't he? The number one, Jordy Van Stappershoff was in goal instead. And
what a name.
It's a great name, and it was a wonderful
Harry Enfield, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like. I mean, it was a worldy free kick in some respects from Callum Camps, but I think I could have saved it. I think if I stood there and stuck my hand up, it might have broke my hand. But I could have got something on it. It just looked like the goalkeeper almost dived out of the way of it, and that I think just triggered a bit of a collapse against Fleetwood in quite poor playing conditions. So yeah, I felt a bit sorry for him, but. Yeah, 6-6 wins, not enough.
I thought it was interesting that the axe falls on the day that they scored one of the standout goals in the division as well.
Yeah, it was like a great goal.
Multiple players involved, great passing move. And I watched a lot of Josh Grant in Chelsea's youth teams. I've not seen him that high up before, but brilliant little finish as well. So there's been a lot of good, I think. And that's why I think there's mixed feelings amongst the fans. But the results ultimately mean that they'll probably be on board with it.
Yeah, it was his first goal for the club as well, Josh Grant. So a good one to start his account with. You both mentioned recruitment there. And actually, the club's head of recruitment, Tommy Ridrington, is the odds-on candidate to get the job permanently with Paddy Power. So would that keep the fans happy? I mean, I know Michael Flynn was on Quest at the weekend and he spoke quite glowingly about Bristol Rovers as a club, perhaps as a, you know, it's not that far from where he is. Could he be in with a shout as well?
Well, there's a lot of good managers not in work at the moment that might be interested in this job. It depends, doesn't it? Like, in terms of the playing style, the direction, do they want to stick with the same or go for a more of a proven winner type manager? It's a really hard one. I mean, the Cowley brothers are out of work. I think you could certainly do a lot worse than try and go for them. Flynn is doing great work, obviously, at Newport. So, yeah, no, interesting. Personally, after going with Ben Garner, a manager that had never managed in League One, I think it would be crazy, if I'm honest, to go with another unproven manager at that level. I think they have to go for someone that's been there and done it to some degree.
Yeah, well, we shall wait and see. Finally, we'll end our League One review with arguably the shock of the weekend, Dave Artell's Crewe beating league leaders Peterborough. The stats say that the match was even, 10 shots, 3 on target apiece. So what was the actual difference in this game, Sam?
Oh, well, you have to say Crewe played very well, and in particular, some of their standout players from over the last 18 months or so. Wintle, outstanding. Obviously, you know, Kirk's ability and Pickering as well, the goal scorers. But I think a fortuitously awarded free kick and also a mistake from Peterborough, Mason's pass, allowing Kirk in for the goal. So not to say Crewe didn't play very well. I think the press was led excellently by Mandron and they really stopped Peterborough playing, but it was a real sub below par performance from Peterborough. You know, really disappointing in all areas. You know, missing Nathan Thompson and Jack Taylor badly, I think, and just didn't get Clark Harris into the game. So I think sometimes at the moment especially, you're going to get these games where teams just don't turn up, and that happened at the weekend. They changed it at half-time to Peterborough, but to no avail. He's been flittering between 4-2-3-1 and the back three, playing two number 10s, and that didn't have any effect on the game whatsoever. So passing really bad, and just a really bad off day. But yeah, credit Crewe, because their results have not been good of late, and that was a real coupon buster.
I saw that Newcastle boss Steve Bruce was in the stands watching that one as well, Clarkie. Who will he have had his eye on? Michael Mandron, maybe?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, so Ricky Dembele, I think, probably is the star man in the division at the moment. So maybe he was looking at him, and if he was, then it might be good news for Posh fans, because I don't think he really did anything of note in the game. So yeah, but Mandron is a player of potential. He's still young enough to get a big move, and he's definitely added something different for Crewe this season. I really like them. They've lost 5 matches 1-0 this season, which I think is both a good and a bad sign, because they can stay with anyone, I think, in the division, but yeah, they've just been a little bit too easy to score against, I guess, at times. Defence isn't their strong point. But I'm excited for them. I love the midfield. Wintle, Lowry and Finney. They're just really neat and tidy footballers out of the Crewe mould. And you know I like to mention ages on occasion on the podcast. And I've had a look at the age of the 11 at the weekend. 8 of the 11 were between 20 and 24. And I think that's really healthy, because that's an age where you're coming into your prime. And I think if they stick together as a group over the course of this season and next, they could be a really, really strong team. 15 of the 19 players used this season have been between 20 and 26. So it really is a group in their early 20s that have bought into Arteta and his methodology. So yeah, no, I'm quite excited for Crewe. As always with them, though, it's, can they keep hold of these talents moving forwards? Yeah, they would take scalps like Peterborough along the way, because they've got these really good footballers, but they maybe just lack that steel and consistency. That's the one missing ingredient.
Let's wrap up League One then with some odds. Producer Abby, nice and simple, winner please, according to Paddy Power.
Their loss at the weekend hasn't affected them being the favourites. Peterborough still 3-1 to favourites to win League One. Sunderland coming in second, 7-2, and Portsmouth 6-1.
Who's getting promoted, please?
Sunderland favourites to get promoted, 10-11. Peterborough evens. Portsmouth 13-8. Hull 2-1. Charlton 2-1. And Ipswich are 16-5. That gives you 6 teams there.
So who's going down?
Going down is Northampton. They lost at the weekend, didn't they, to Accrington, 4-6, so their odds on, as are Wigan 4-5, as are Burton 5-6, as are Rochdale 10-11. So done and dusted, right?
Yeah, really simple. Thank you. Right, next stop on this EFL tour, it's League Two.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
The Totally Football Shows and The Athletic are delighted to be supporting Football Aid for the months of October and November. Bid now at footballaid.com to get your hands on some incredible football memorabilia, including signed shirts from Steven Gerrard, Luca Vialli, Gareth Bale, and even Peter Crouch's boots. Find out more, get bidding, and support the cause at footballaid.com.
Right, League Two headlines. Southend United have won a match. I repeat, Southend United have won a match. So did fellow relegation place occupants Scunthorpe. What a weekend for them. At the top, Barrow struck in the 96th minute to stop Cambridge retaking the league lead. Tranmere also took until injury time to beat 10 men Port Vale 4-3. Meanwhile, Nigel Clough is unbeaten as Stags boss, but Richie Wellens' start as Salford manager didn't go so well. They lost 2-0 to Bolton on Friday night. We're going to start the look back, though, on the weekend's events in the South West, because Exeter drew 2-2 to All with Bradford. And here to join the show, it's Exeter boss Matty Taylor.
Right, so one side of the coin says unbeaten in 12, and the other says that was perhaps a winnable game against Bradford. What do you say?
Yeah, we feel that way. Probably been a reflection of our season so far. We performed really well for certain periods of games and been on top, but just not managed to see those games through and pick up the much-needed wins that everyone desires at this level. We played some outstanding football at the weekend and created a lot of chances against a good team in terms of in relation to Bradford, but just disappointing in terms of a couple of cheap goals and not really taking our opportunities to increase that lead when we're on top.
Yeah, you've been a real delight to watch this season, but conceding goals has been a little bit of a problem. I think that was the eighth time this season that you've conceded two or more. Is that something you're working on fixing?
Yeah, certainly. But we've got an extra attacking dimension to our game this season, which is, you know, proved productive in terms of the goals ratio we've been scoring. You always want to keep clean sheets and you always want to score the first goal. First goal at this level is absolutely key. The irony at the weekend, we had a corner and then 10 seconds later, they were putting the ball in the back of our net. So, but it's the mentality of the group and a lot of managers will be saying it this time of season. We've got quite a young group as well who's still learning the game, learning the trade, but learning the trade on the job as well. So mistakes are going to be made. We're far from the finished article, but the signs are really good in terms of what we want to get to. And there's some promising positions on that football pitch which have probably exceeded our expectations at the start of the season.
Matt, how did you deal with the disappointment of the playoff final? Not yourself, but how did you raise the morale amongst the players? Because in my experience, it can drag on to the next season. Was it individual meetings or did you sit them all down in pre-season?
No, individual meetings straight after the game or a couple of days after the game. It was a devastating loss. Our weaknesses were really highlighted on the biggest stage that evening. But that wasn't a fair reflection on our season. Generally, we'd been pretty consistent throughout the season. I'd been close to those top three positions throughout the campaign. Season obviously suspended, 9 or 10 games short, and we still fancied ourselves of those automatic positions. So the squad was a lot stronger last season. Unfortunately, the majority or 9 of those players left us, eight more senior ones and one player who was on loan. And we only recruited 2 players at the start of pre-season. A third came in the form of Lewis Page midway through pre-season. So it was a tight time in terms of budget and obviously restraints. But it meant we had to go a certain direction this season, which is a little bit younger, change our formation, a little bit more dynamic on the outside of the pitch. And like I say, in terms of our attacking play, it's been really pleasing. I'm an old school defender at heart and I want a few more clean sheets. But sometimes you make sacrifices and, you know, with less pressure on us this season and very little expectation, we've really given it a good go.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to touch on, you kind of mentioned it there, but I remember watching Michael Flynn's Newport losing the playoff final and obviously they consolidated last year, this year looking really strong, playing a new style. So what have you and your coaching staff adapted in the pre-season, the opening games, to make sure you are contenders for automatic this year and don't have to go through the playoffs?
Really, at the start of the season, I've got to be honest, in terms of where I thought the squad was, we weren't as strong as last season in terms of the squad and the players we've got. But we've got more legs on the outside of the pitch. So if we can get a strong spine through the middle and a consistent spine and some of the more senior ones through the middle of the pitch, then those legs on the outside, which I keep talking about and referring to, will be able to show their ability. The circumstances of the league will continue to change. Pitches will deteriorate from probably next weekend onwards. Our home pitch will deteriorate. We might even have to change our style again like we did at the start of the season. So we've got to be flexible in terms of formations, but you played under Paul yourself as well. And if there's any group of players who are flexible in relation to changing shape and doing what's needed in relation to the game, then it's Exeter City and Exeter City players. So that's a great place to be going into these winter months. Like I say, the group have got to be able to step in at any moment and be able to play what's needed for that specific opposition or the conditions we face. They're motivated. You mentioned at the start about how I had to pick them up after the playoff final. Footballers generally are motivated themselves. My worry, if I've got a worry this season, is at some stage the mental and physical burnout will come. I don't know when or if it'll come, but that's one thing I am worried about on the back of 3 out of the last 4 years playoff finals and very little break and the amount of games this season. But it's the same for all clubs and all managers. But that is one thing in the back of my mind which might well come at a certain stage throughout this season.
Well then, Matty, I've got to ask the question. Based on what you just said there, we all know that Exeter City received a windfall from the Ollie Watkins transfer, £4 million by all accounts. Will any of that be made available to you, do you think, to strengthen the team should you need it in the next window?
I hope so. I'm going to ask for some. I'm certainly going to ask for some. Look, Sam knows more than anyone. Exeter City work in a certain way. We're owned by the trust and we have to generate our own money, our own income. And that's even more difficult when there's no fans coming through the turnstiles. So a lot of it will be paid to pay initial debts and to pay off some of the stadium and then some investment in the training ground and then the budget for the next couple of seasons. So this squad of players we've got now has been assembled on a certain type of budget, but there is room for strengthening in January. That window is always a difficult window because every manager is looking for the same sort of profile. But we certainly want to be in that market, something we've probably not done in the last couple of seasons. If anything, the last couple of Januaries have weakened us in terms of losing the likes of Jadon Stockley and other players. So we want to be in those markets, but it's got to be the right value for this football club. We can't go signing the most expensive players who are going to come and play a bit part in the remainder of the season. They've got to see it as an investment into coming into the southwest of England or coming down to the southwest of England and buying into what we are as a football club, a development club. And like you touched upon there, we got the windfall from Ollie Watkins. I'm sure we'll be doing that in the next few years from some of our young players at the moment.
Yeah, there might be a few more sell-on fees in the future. I mean, looking at some of the young players you got involved in the squad at the moment. A few bonuses, I'd imagine. Joel Randall, obviously last season on loan in non-league. You've got Archie Collins. He's played, you know, every game, I think, so far and impressed. They just keep coming, don't they, these graduates?
They've been outstanding. It's important to say these aren't 18-year-old kids. They've had 2 years as pros training with us every day and spent their time on loan in the non-league scene, which isn't always pretty, on loan at Truro and Tiverton and Taunton respectively, but learning the trade and learning men's football. I think Archie Collins has played, you know, 80 or 90 games now. He's been a really top player for a long period of time for ourselves. And then the likes of Joe Randall and Josh Key have come as a surprise to a lot of people, but we saw their potential years ago. They just needed a bit of time and they needed the opportunity as well. And if there's ever a time to play your young ones, it's certainly at the moment when there's no fans giving them either a bit of abuse or keeping them motivated. It's a great time to play the young kids.
Great time to play the young kids, and they're doing really well as well. You're fourth in the table, Matt. What's the ultimate aim of the season?
Look, at the start of every season, you want to get promoted. It's as simple as that. But I was realistic at the start of the season on the changeover we had, losing those 9 and 8 senior players and not recruiting as strongly as we would have liked. I was a little bit unsure of what we would be in terms of season, but we've started off consistently. The league hasn't settled down yet in terms of the big hitters or the big spenders or the teams with the bigger squads and the best players haven't quite hit form yet. I suspect they will do in the coming months, but we've got to stay as close to it as we possibly can. And then, like I say, January might look slightly differently for ourselves than it has done in recent seasons. If we have a positive recruitment drive in January and keep our form going on the pitch, then we'll be close to it. But a lot can happen between now and January and now and the end of the season. But the value of consistency over a number of seasons at this club is showing time and time again.
Matt Taylor there, Exeter City manager. Now then, the game of the weekend came at Vale Park. At 7 goals, 2 of them coming in injury time to snatch Tranmere victory, including the indisputable goal of the weekend.
Morris collects. Morris has a goal! Oh, what a screamer! The 96th minute of an engrossing affair at Vale Park. And Tranmere Rovers have surely snatched all 3 points with an absolute screamer from Kieran Morris.
Adrian, this was just a cracking game, wasn't it? Talk us through it, though. I mean, did it all kind of fall apart when Luke Joyce was sent off for Port Vale?
I think it did to some degree from a Port Vale perspective. It was a bad tackle. It was a really bad one. And I don't think he could have any complaints at getting the red card. What happened is what often happens when you lose a player and you're winning. It's you retreat and you start to think, right, we can't give this away. And that, I think, gave the initiative back to Tranmere, who'd started the game very, very, you know, even though they fell behind 2-0, they'd bounced back quite nicely. They were playing some nice stuff. And it gave them the initiative to really just pepper them towards the end of the game. You got to admire the work that the caretaker Ian Dawes is doing. He's backed up a win at Harrogate, 1-0 in the league, an FA Cup triumph against Accrington, and he's gone and won at Vale Park. It's a good audition for the job.
Would you give it to him?
Well, yeah, I think he has to be a contender. I mean, the players are clearly enjoying themselves. He's made a few changes. He's got the team playing with more assertiveness, and I always like that in a team. They're playing higher up the pitch, a bit more attack-minded. We saw that with the adventure of the comeback. And they've got great forward players. I think that's clearly the strength of their team. Blackett Taylor was awesome in the game. James Vaughan is also in the group. Otis Khan pushes on from midfield to score goals. Woolery the same. He came off the bench. Morgan Ferrier was on the bench as well. Liam Feeney, who was brilliant for Blackpool last year, wasn't there because his wife was giving birth. So they've got loads of options going forward, Tranmere. They should, in theory, be one of the most exciting teams to watch in League Two. And they haven't been. So hopefully, if Ian Dawes carries on in the job a bit longer, they'll develop into that. But yeah, no, this was a deserved win, I think. Port Vale will be kicking themselves, obviously. But over the course of the 90, Tranmere, with their slick passing and high tempo, I think there were no real grumbles that they deserved the 3 points.
Yeah, Port Vale will be kicking themselves because they drop out of the promotion places as a result of that as well. But they have been decent this season, so always a good watch, and I'm sure they'll bounce back. Now, it wouldn't be a Totally Football League show if we didn't mention Southend, would it? And it definitely wouldn't be a Totally Football League show if we didn't shout about Southend actually winning.
The away side keep possession inside the box, and it's in! Emil Acqua on the turn and finding the bottom corner.
Adrian Clark, as a former Southend player, they actually deserved this, didn't they?
They did, yeah. It was a really good team performance. And the manager was fortunate in that he had a couple more experienced players available. John White, who, when I used to go and watch Southend most weeks, he was a stalwart of the defence, and he's still there sent many years later. And it's his first start of the season, first start since February, actually. And he played really well alongside Lennon, who's one of the more experienced players. You've got Oxley, who's vastly experienced in goal. In midfield, Dieng and Dimitriou. So the spine of the team, for once, wasn't full of kids and young players that were adjusting to the level. So that definitely made the difference. Well played. I'm chuffed for Mark Moseley. I know that Southend fans are really pleased for him because no one's really getting on his back. It's Ron Martin, the chairman, really, that is sort of facing the wrath of the supporters, because they want the embargo lifted. They want the club to be in a position where they can go and recruit now. Mark Moseley, he's got a lot of goodwill behind him. And because this was a tactical win, they went with a game plan and it worked, went slightly more direct and were very compact. Then, you know, I think hopefully, onwards and upwards, it'll give the players so much of a lift. And I've looked at the fixtures, Faye. They've only faced one team in the current bottom eight so far. So they've definitely got a chance to reel some teams in if they can put a run together. They've got Bolton, Stevenage, Scunthorpe, Mansfield, Grimsby, all in the coming weeks, all before mid-December. That little spell of games, that might actually define their season and possible survival.
Sam, anything else that you want to add beyond just screaming shrimpers and keeping it going for as long as possible?
Yeah, I've seen Southend this season, and yeah, they're very youthful. So Adrian's bang on with the players that came back at the weekend, Dieng and Dimitriou, the spine of the team, you know, looking stronger now. And you can probably get away, you know, my experience of having a bit more flair in the wide areas, or maybe a bit more inconsistency. If you get that spine right, really good. Most shots on target this season by some distance, 7 they had in the game. And I wanted to talk about the striker, Acqua, who obviously came on and got the winner. And listen, I might have got this horribly wrong, but every time I've seen him, I've liked the look of him. And I think they were going to let him go in the summer. And Moseley actually tied him down to a new contract, not because there was interest, but because they probably didn't think he was going to make the grade. So he's 20 years old. He's had quite a productive loan spell in non-league. I've liked his awareness when I've seen him. His hold-up play, his touch is good. I mean, he's probably 6'3", 6'4", I would say. And the bit he's had to add is getting goals, because he doesn't get in enough goal-scoring positions. I've not seen him have enough shots, headers. I think that's just his third, maybe, career goal, professional, talking about EFL goal. So it was a brilliant goal as well. shifted it onto his left side and drilled it into the far post. So for me, he's one to keep an eye on because I think he's got potential to have a good career and maybe go on to a higher tier. So listen, come back to me if I've got this horribly wrong in 12 months, 24 months time.
Don't you worry, we will. Right, final stop is the newly made Mansfield under Nigel Clough, an unbeaten start and Mansfield's first league victory coming at the innocent New Lawn over Forest Green. Sam, this really feels like what we expect Mansfield to be now, a kind of team challenging those towards the top and just getting better and better under Nigel Clough.
Yeah, possibly. I think they probably just needed a kick up the backside.
Confidence.
Organised. Further, he's changed the system. We know him, I think, latterly at Burton as a 4-3-3 man. It looks like they've gone that way. It was the 3-5-2. It seemed to be week after week with Coughlin, despite, you know, disappointing results. So I think that's kind of what he's done in the short. There's four front players to choose from, none of them pulling up trees. So Nigel Clough, having been a creative goal-scoring type player, he needs to focus on that area as well, because the calibre of the player, as Tranmere have in their squad at the front of the pitch, is great. So he needs to get Cook and Maynard and Jamie Reid, a player that scored freely in non-league, firing in League Two, which they should all be capable of. But, you know, this was just an old-fashioned performance, raced into a lead and then defended with their lives in hellish conditions against a Forest Green onslaught. So I'm not going to get too sophisticated today, and I'll pass that to Adrian if he's seen something that I haven't.
Adrian?
No, you're right. I mean, the stats tell you that. They had 7 shots. Forest Green had 22. And it is, it's that situation. You race into an early lead. It's like, blimey, especially against a team like Forest Green who... Well, statistically, they've had the most shots. They make the most passes, the most accurate passes, and they face the fewest shots, Forest Green. So in all the key areas, Forest Green are numbers-wise the best team in the division. So when you race into a lead against them, you think, right, okay, let's make sure we don't throw this away. But no, look, he's an experienced gaffer, and I think he's a good people person. I get that impression. He's a decent man manager. I think he'd have gone round a few of the individuals, arm around the shoulder, and just said, look, I know that you're a better player than you've shown, you know, in recent times. I believe in you. And he's begun to get a tune out of some of these guys. So, yeah, I think Mansfield, we've said all along, they've got the squad to be challenging for promotion. Maybe they've got the right manager as well now.
OK, before we move on, anything else you'd like to mention, shout out, or just bring our attention to that we might have missed, either of you?
Trippers.
Well, Scunthorpe, we can't go the whole pod without giving Scunthorpe a mention, can we? Blimey.
The pass eventually finds him. He's got support on the overlap, but Van Veen trying to go alone. Oh, what a hit.
I mean, they had lost 8 in a row, hadn't they? And they'd just come off the back of a COVID outbreak or a COVID break, and then going out of the cup at home to Solihull Moors. So they went to Oldham and won 2-0 and absolutely battered them. You know, had more of the ball and more shots. It was a really accomplished away performance from Scunthorpe. So well done to them. I think a little bit like Southend, he brought in a couple more experienced players, particularly fullback Junior Brown and Jordan Clark came in for their first starts. Issa came back. He's a winger that's always capable of making something happen. Back to basics from Scunthorpe, and it worked well for them.
I don't want to say that the pandemic's ever been a positive for anyone at any stage, but considering they've had 8 straight defeats, I think we're probably looking at a chairman who's just taking a breath and just thinking the circumstances that Adrian's just laid down there has to come into account this season. And I think simplifying things and going a little bit back to basics, waiting for players to regain fitness, whether that's through the illness or through injury, was a really sensible thing here. And the thing that's staring out to me when we talk about Southend and Scunthorpe is just the goals. They need to improve in that department. I mean, they had 4 in the previous 8 games before the victory at Oldham. So, and Southend, I think, have had 6 in their 12 games. So if they don't improve in that department, they're both going to get sucked into real, well, they're going to continue to be in real relegation danger. So that's where both teams need to improve.
Yeah, very much so. They needed that regroup. We need to regroup and have a look at the odds as well. Abby, what does all this movement from the weekend do to the odds? First of all, who's winning League Two?
Well, the weekend really hasn't affected the odds because Newport are still the favourites to win League Two. They're 9-2. Cheltenham coming in second at 11-2. Exeter 13-2. Of course, we spoke to Matt Taylor earlier. Cambridge, who do currently sit in second place, are 10-1.
So who's getting promoted?
Doesn't change too much in the promotion stakes. Newport are evens. Cheltenham 6-5. Exeter 13-10. Forest Green 17-10. Salford City still up there despite their loss to Bolton at the weekend. 9-5. And Cambridge 21-10.
That's about it for today then. Before we end though, in celebration of Tony Pulis's return to the Football League. This is almost like, do you have a favourite chocolate bar, isn't it? Do you have a favourite baseball cap? Adrian Clark.
I really don't suit caps, I'm afraid. Yeah, I just look truly awful in any kind of cap. So now I don't even own one. The only cap I own is a flat cap, a kind of, you know, country squire type flat cap. And yeah, even that I feel a little bit of a plonker wearing. So yeah, it's just not for me.
Well, I know what I'm getting you for Secret Santa in that case. Sam?
Amazingly, I do. And it's because of the sun. I don't really like baseball caps, but I just get, you know, so sunburnt and so lightheaded if my bald scalp gets the brunt of it. So during lockdown one, I unearthed a San Francisco Giants baseball cap, which I bought from the baseball stadium in San Francisco, funnily enough. And it's a little bit weathered. And I wore it all throughout the summer. It's obviously black with the orange SF emblem on the front. And I love it. I love it. But it wouldn't be my choice. I'm probably more a woolly hat or a flat cap as well, like Clarkie said. But yeah, it's so much of a favourite that I've been online and I'm going to get a fresh one for next summer.
Wow. Well, see, now here's me thinking this was an insignificant discussion, but, you know, you just smashed it there, Sam. It's very important. Mine is just a plain black baseball cap, and I do wear it all the time, but I don't wear anything jazzy or anything like that. It's just plain and very boring, just like me. Right, anyway, until next time, join Ali and George on Thursday for the Totally Football League Show Extra Time. Matt will be back on Monday. Thank you for having me. But for now, it's goodbye from Adrian, Sam, and me as well. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and despite literally spending months of my life playing Football Manager, I'm still terrible at it. That's why I'm launching The Football Manager Show, the latest podcast from The Athletic. Every week, I'll speak to the people who know the game best, the people who make the game. We'll take a proper look at things like training, recruitment, and tactics. We'll try to answer your questions. We'll do everything we can to keep you eager to play just one more game, and altogether less inclined to quit without saving. The era of Cherno and Tonton and dear sweet Michael Duff is over. The new Football Manager is bigger, better, more challenging than ever. And I need some help. If you do too, you can subscribe now. Just look for the Football Manager Show by The Athletic, wherever you get all your other podcasts. It starts in November, and knowing my track record, I'll be unemployed by December.
Muddy Knees Media.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.